Chapter 5. Leaning her dimpled chin upon her hand, and watching the bright blaze, the carrier looked at her, and then at him, and then at her, and then at him again. She honors and obeys, no doubt, you know, apostrophe said Tackleton, and that, as I am not a man of sentiment, is quite enough for me. But do you think there's anything more in it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I think, apostrophe observed the carrier, that I should chuck any man out of window, who said there wasn't. Apostrophe, exactly so, apostrophe returned the other with an unusual alacrity of assent. To be sure. Doubtless you would. Of course. I'm certain of it. Good night. Pleasant dreams. Apostrophe, the carrier was puzzled, and made uncomfortable and uncertain, in spite of himself. He couldn't help showing it, in his manner. Good night, my dear friend. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Tackleton, compassionately. I'm off. We're exactly alike, in reality, I see. You won't give us tomorrow evening? Well, next day you go out visiting, I know. I'll meet you there, and bring my wife, that is to be. It'll do her good. You're agreeable? Thank ye. What's that? Apostrophe, it was a loud cry from the carrier's wife. A loud, sharp, sudden cry, that made the room ring, like a glass vessel. She had risen from her seat, and stood like one transfixed by terror and surprise. The stranger had advanced towards the fire to warm himself, and stood within a short stride of her chair. But quite still. Dot. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the carrier. Mary. Darling. What's the matter? Apostrophe, they were all about her in a moment. Caleb, who had been dozing on the cake box, in the first imperfect recovery of his suspended presence of mind, seized Miss Slowboy by the hair of her head, but immediately apologized. Mary! Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed the carrier, supporting her in his arms. Are you ill? What is it? Tell me, dear. Apostrophe, she only answered, by beating her hands together, and falling into a wild fit of laughter. Then, sinking from his grasp upon the ground, she covered her face with her apron, and wept bitterly. And then she laughed again, and then she cried again, and then she said how cold it was, and suffered him to lead her to the fire, where she sat down as before. The old man standing, as before, quite still. I'm better, John, apostrophe she said. I'm quite well now I apostrophe, John. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but John was on the other side of her. Why turn her face towards the strange old gentleman, as if addressing him? Was her brain wandering? Only a fancy, John dear, a kind of shock, a something coming suddenly before my eyes, I don't know what it was. It's quite gone, quite gone. Apostrophe, I'm glad it's gone, apostrophe muttered Tackleton, turning the expressive eye all around the room. I wonder where it's gone, and what it was. Humph. Caleb, come here. Who's that with the gray hair? Apostrophe, I don't know, sir, apostrophe returned Caleb in a whisper. Never see him before, in all my life. A beautiful figure for a nutcracker, quite a new model. With a screw jaw opening down into his waistcoat, he'd be lovely. Apostrophe, not ugly enough, apostrophe said Tackleton. Or for a firebox either, apostrophe observed Caleb, in deep contemplation, what a model. Unscrew his head to put the matches in, turn him heels apart for the light, and what a firebox for a gentleman's mantel shelf, just as he stands. Apostrophe, apostrophe, not half ugly enough, apostrophe said Tackleton. Nothing in him at all. Come. Bring that box. All right now, I hope. Apostrophe, quite gone. Apostrophe, apostrophe said the little woman, waving him hurriedly away. Good night. Apostrophe, apostrophe, good night, apostrophe said Tackleton. Good night, John Peerybingle. Take care how you carry that box, Caleb. Let it fall, and I'll murder you. Dark as pitch, and weather worse than ever, eh? Good night. Apostrophe, so, with another sharp look round the room, he went out at the door, followed by Caleb with the wedding cake on his head. The carrier had been so much astounded by his little wife, and so busily engaged in soothing and tending her, that he had scarcely been conscious of the stranger's presence, until now, when he again stood there, their only guest. "He don't belong to them, you see," apostrophe said John. "I must give him a hint to go." "Apostrophe, I beg your pardon, friend," apostrophe said the old gentleman, advancing to him. "The more so, as I fear your wife has not been well, but the attendant whom my infirmity," apostrophe he touched his ears, and shook his head, "renders almost indispensable, not having arrived, I fear there must be some mistake. The bad night which made the shelter of your comfortable cart, may I never have a worse. So acceptable, is still as bad as ever. Would you, in your kindness, suffer me to rent a bed here?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, yes, apostrophe, cried Dot. "Yes, certainly. Apostrophe, oh." Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the carrier, surprised by the rapidity of this consent. "Well, I don't object, but still I'm not quite sure that apostrophe, hush. Apostrophe, apostrophe," she interrupted. "Dear John." Apostrophe, "why, he's stone deaf," apostrophe urged John. "I know he is, but yes, sir, certainly. Yes, certainly. I'll make him up a bed, directly, John." Apostrophe, as she hurried off to do it, the flutter of her spirits, and the agitation of her manner, were so strange, that the carrier stood looking after her, quite confounded. "Did its mothers make it up a bed then?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Miss Slowboy to the baby. "And did its hair grow brown and curly, when its caps was lifted off, and frighten it, a precious pets, a sitting by the fires?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, with that unaccountable attraction of the mind to trifles, which is often incidental to a state of doubt and confusion, the carrier, as he walked slowly to and fro, found himself mentally repeating even these absurd words, many times. So many times, that he got them by heart, and was still conning them over and over, like a lesson, when Tilly, after administering as much friction to the little bald head with her hand as she thought wholesome according to the practice of nurses, had once more tied the baby's cap on. "And frighten it, a precious pets, a sitting by the fires. What frightened Dot, I wonder?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, mused the carrier, pacing to and fro. He scouted, from his heart, the insinuations of the toy merchant, and yet they filled him with a vague, indefinite uneasiness. For, Tackleton was quick and sly, and he had that painful sense, himself, of being of slow perception, that a broken hint was always worrying to him. He certainly had no intention in his mind of linking anything that Tackleton had said with the unusual conduct of his wife. But the two subjects of reflection came into his mind together, and he could not keep them asunder. The bed was soon made ready, and the visitor, declining all refreshment but a cup of tea, retired. Then, Dot quite well again, she said, quite well again, arranged the great chair in the chimney corner for her husband, filled his pipe, and gave it him, and took her usual little stool beside him on the hearth. She always would sit on that little stool. I think she must have had a kind of notion that it was a coaxing, wheedling little stool. She was, out and out, the very best filler of a pipe, I should say, in the four quarters of the globe. To see her put that chubby little finger in the bowl, and then blow down the pipe to clear the tube, and, when she had done so, affect to think that there was really something in the tube, and blow a dozen times, and hold it to her eye like a telescope, with a most provoking twist in her capital little face, as she looked down it, was quite a brilliant thing. As to the tobacco, she was perfect mistress of the subject, and her lighting of the pipe, with a wisp of paper, when the carrier had it in his mouth going so very near his nose, and yet not scorching it, was art, high art. And the cricket and the kettle, turning up again, acknowledged it. The bright fire, blazing up again, acknowledged it. The little mower on the clock, in his unheeded work, acknowledged it. The carrier, in his smoothing forehead and expanding face, acknowledged it, the rattiest of all. And as he soberly and thoughtfully puffed at his old pipe, and as the Dutch clock ticked, and as the red fire gleamed, and as the cricket chirped, that genius of his hearth and home, for such the cricket was, came out, in fairy shape, into the room, and summoned many forms of home about him. Dots of all ages, and all sizes, filled the chamber. Dots who were merry children, running on before him gathering flowers, in the fields, coy dots, half shrinking from, half yielding to, the pleading of his own rough image. Newly married dots, alighting at the door, and taking wondering possession of the household keys. Motherly little dots, attended by fictitious slow boys, bearing babies to be christened. Matronly dots, still young and blooming, watching dots of daughters, as they danced at rustic balls. Fat dots, encircled and beset by troops of rosy grandchildren. Withered dots, who leaned on sticks, and tottered as they crept along. Old carriers too, appeared, with blind old boxers lying at their feet, and newer carts with younger drivers, Peerybingle brothers on the tilt, and sick old carriers, tended by the gentlest hands, and graves of dead and gone old carriers, green in the churchyard. And as the cricket showed him all these things, he saw them plainly, though his eyes were fixed upon the fire. The carrier's heart grew light and happy, and he thanked his household gods with all his might, and cared no more for Gruff and Tackleton than you do. But, what was that young figure of a man, which the same fairy cricket set so near her stool, and which remained there, singly and alone? Why did it linger still, so near her, with its arm upon the chimney-piece, ever repeating married? And not to me. Apostrophe, O dot. O failing dot. There is no place for it in all your husband's visions. Why has its shadow fallen on his hearth? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.